HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today I am joined by Loretta Dignam. Loretta is founder of the Menopause Hub. Loretta, you're very welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for inviting me along and to shine the spotlight on this area of menopause, which has been taboo for such a long time.
So what do you guys do in the Menopause Hub, Loretta?
So basically, I set up the Menopause Hub born out of my own experience of going through menopause. And I set it up in December 2018. And I've worked in the corporate sector for over 30 years in very senior roles in marketing, communications, branding, big multinationals internationally and in Ireland. And a month before I turned 50, I had my what was to be my last period. And very soon after that, I started with hot flushes. And I knew nothing about menopause, nothing. In addition to that, I felt I was too young for menopause and that it was something that happened to much older women. And I was completely blindsided by it. And I had never heard the word perimenopause, which is the phase leading up to the kind of the end of the periods and so on. And so I missed all of the symptoms that affected me along that journey for the previous 7 years. Anyhow, to cut a long story short, after 3 years of the symptoms that I was aware of, I sought help, medical help for myself. I tried everything natural before that, sought medical help, and it transformed my life. And I got my old self back and I thought, wow, I need to do something to help other women, to advocate for them, to shortcut their journey. So I opened the Menopause Hub. We started out with a clinic based in Mount Marion with medical doctors. So we have a team of doctors. We have gynecologists. We have GPs with a special interest in menopause. We have a dietitian and nutritionist, a psychologist, an acupuncturist, and we have a women's health physio. So we offer this sort of range of services to women. And I called it the Menopause Hub so that I could add services in as and what was required for women. Since then, we've gone into the whole area of menopause in the workplace. And because I've been on the board of the Abbey Theatre and I served on the board for 6 years and just stepped down, I chaired their gender equality committee and we launched a gender equality policy. So as a result, I could see the power of policy to drive change. So I'm also working on menopause in the workplace. We launched a programme this year. And we're working with a lot of major corporates on that. So really, the business will continue to grow around this whole area of menopause. And with the clinic, when I opened it, was Ireland's first dedicated menopause clinic. Some others have opened up in the space. So there was nothing that was dedicated to menopause before that, considering 50% of the population will experience menopause. And that is a guarantee. And 90% of women will experience symptoms. So, 50% of the population would be affected and the other 50% would be possibly impacted. So the fact that it has gone kind of unspoken about and with such a taboo around it is kind of shocking, really. But anyway, so now we're the only multidisciplinary clinic. So we have all of those disciplines surrounding. So that's what we do. I'm also in discussion with government, with the various different political parties, to talk about, and the Department of Health to talk about what women need and want in this space.
And Loretta, why is it suddenly more in spotlight?
I think a few things. I think we're the last generation of women who are going to put up with this. A lot of celebrities in the UK, and the UK are a little bit more advanced than we are, but there's a lot of celebrities have come out in the UK and talked openly about menopause, which is opened up the conversation. There has been public clinics run through the NHS in the UK. There are some private clinics now, but there's a lot more activists, if you like, or advocates in that space. And now it's becoming a hot topic, if you don't mind the pun. And then during the summer in Ireland, we had Sally Ann Brady, who is a co-founder of the Irish Menopause, an online support group. I was in the background encouraging her to write to Joe Duffy. And so she wrote in and he covered the menopause for 8 days in a row on his show exclusively and lifted the lid off menopause in Ireland. And since then, the feedback, like our phones were ringing off the hook in the clinic, the calls coming in from organisations saying that their staff were asking for help and support in this area. So I think it's, I think it's a movement right now, and I think it's about time, and it's well overdue, and the next generations won't have to push the boundaries like we are having to do right now, and that's and it's right.
And before we get on to the workplace, something that I think is relevant to it, I on your website, I know you've done a survey, quite an extensive survey earlier this year, was it? Sorry.
Yeah.
But one of the things that comes up was the percentage of women surveyed who didn't know anything really, or didn't know a lot about the menopause, which in preparation for interviewing you was I was delighted to see from you know, from a greedy point of view. It made me feel slightly better of my own lack of knowledge. There's an education piece here, clearly. It's societally, before we even talk about workplaces.
100%. I'm a big fan of research. I would have done a lot of research, market research, surveys and that kind of thing, understanding the customer base and so on when I worked in my previous roles. And there is a dearth of information around menopause in Ireland. So I've taken it upon myself to conduct some research. So the research you're referring to was done among 1,250 women in Ireland in 2020, in September, October 2020. And 80% of women said that they were unprepared for menopause. So it's a staggering 8 out of 10 women. And I can relate to that. I can concur with that, because I would consider myself to be a woman of the world, if you like. I would consider myself to be reasonably well educated, reasonably intelligent. And I was completely blindsided by this. So 80% were unprepared. 66% knew little or nothing about menopause. And I can concur with that too, because all I knew was hot flushes and no periods. And that was all I knew. I hadn't even heard the word perimenopause. So that seems to be the biggest issue at the moment, is awareness and education. And if women don't know what's happening to them, then how can their partners, husbands, colleagues, friends, you know, family know what's happening to them? They don't. And what women say to us all the time, and the two sort of most common things are, I think I'm going mad. Because all these things are happening and they don't understand why, and they've come out of the blue. Some of them are in the area of, so there's about 40 different symptoms of menopause, and they're divided into the mental, emotional, psychological area. Then they're divided into the physiological area, and then they're divided into the genitourinary, which is more kind of the pelvic area. And when I look at the women that have suffered, I didn't suffer with anxiety, but a lot of women suffer with anxiety, particularly in the perimenopausal phase, which is the phase leading up to it, with mood swings, with bursts of anger, with panic attacks, with depression, with low mood, with lack of confidence, and so on. So they think that they're actually going mad and they can't understand what's happening. Some of them go to their GPs. Now, there's obviously brilliant GPs out there, but 50% of women will go to their GPs. Some of the GPs who are not knowledgeable about menopause will give them antidepressants or offer antidepressants. And women are kind of going, but I know I'm not depressed. So there's that whole side of it. It's the other one is that women want their old self back. And I can relate to that as well, because all these changes happened and I was like, gosh, and I lost my va-va-voom, my joie de vivre, my mojo, whatever you want to call it, my energy. I felt like a slow puncture and the fatigue and so on. And so I wanted my old self back. And when I got my old self back, I instantly recognized that and thought, wow, you know, what I've just been through, other women need to be educated around this and understand it. And I think education and understanding is key. Because it empowers you then to be prepared to take charge, to seek help, et cetera, rather than suffering in silence.
And Loretta, for the workplace, we all know the stark realities of capitalism, and it means return on investment and all of these sort of things. So why should an employer not care, but you know what I mean? Why should they allocate resource to this specifically? How does it manifest itself in the workplace? Why should they concentrate or look at this?
Well, I was curious about that as well. And I conducted research this year, so in time for World Menopause Day. Yes, there is a World Menopause Day on the 18th of October. So I conducted research, and I think it was done with 1,150 women or something in Ireland. And because no information existed in Ireland, again, we often have to look to the UK for data. So I asked them questions about their experience of menopause in work. I also worked with IBEC, and IBEC did a survey amongst employers, amongst 200 and I think it was 37 employers, 287 actually, about their understanding and what they were doing about menopause. So if I just share some of the data, which actually is kind of staggering. So if we look at it, what women said is that 40% of women said that they'd taken time off work to look after their menopausal symptoms or to deal with menopausal symptoms. And 22% took time off work of 3 days or more. So there's an immediate loss of productivity and an economic hit to the employer. In addition to that, 30% of women said that their symptoms affected them quite a lot, affected their performance quite a lot in the workplace. And 50% said that it affected their performance a little. So, and then the last thing is that 43% of women said that they considered giving up work or cutting back on work because of their menopausal symptoms, and 12% actually gave up work. So what you're looking at there is there's three areas. There's one is of performance, so maybe a dip in performance, where some reasonable adjustments from a line manager, understanding from a line manager, empathy and so on from an employer would actually be really, really supportive and might help reduce that level of productivity or a performance disturbance. The second area is around the loss of productivity by being absent from the workplace. So that is also an economic cost to the employer. And perhaps if women were able to cope better in the workplace because of particular reasonable adjustments, they might be able to not need to take that time off work. And then the third area is obviously considering leaving the workforce or actually leaving the workforce. And that's a loss of an investment. So that employee has a lot of skills, has had a lot of investment in training, has acquired a lot of experience. And to replace that individual is much more expensive than to retain that individual. So we're looking at a retention and attraction issue. So around talent. So I think, if you look at it in the round like that, it is an economic issue and it is a business case for employers to consider. And I describe it as there's about four different areas. One is it's a social issue. So it's a societal issue, understanding this because of 50% of the population are impacted. It's a workplace issue because of this economic piece, but also when IBEC asked their employer base or their member base, 79% said that menopause was relevant to their workplace and their organization. So that's a significant number. And then I think it's also a healthcare issue because women are suffering with symptoms and maybe like myself, I had very bad headaches during my perimenopausal years. I was sent to have a brain scan. Now luckily, everything was fine, but it was actually headaches that were related to the hormonal shifts. I had dry eye, I went to the eye and ear three times to their A&E department. Nobody mentioned perimenopause. I went to the physio because I had ankle joints, pains in my ankles and my joints. I had UTIs, urinary tract infections, throughout my 40s and was constantly at the GP for that. I actually developed asthma. So if you think of all that, there's actually a healthcare issue. There's a healthcare cost. So that's around symptoms. And then there's actually the longer term issues. So living without our estrogen, because that's what happens, is our estrogen falls off a cliff for women. And it's primarily estrogen that we need. But it's not only estrogen. We also need progesterone and testosterone. But falling off a cliff, the implications of that for women, because we're all living longer, is that we are at greater risk of osteoporosis, heart disease, and Alzheimer's, cognitive function. So there's a long-term health cost to all of that. And then there's the whole economic issue around the workplace. So I think it's really time as a society and so on that we sit up and start to really consider this.
Yeah, that's some damning evidence, all right, in terms of the impact on the workplace and the individual. I don't think the individual should obviously be lost in this. Okay, let's turn to the workplace. What can our listeners, typically HR people, it'll probably fall into their world in terms of it being a people issue. What can organizations do? What's your process when you start dealing with organizations?
So basically, we have a full program that we launched this year. And, part of it is understanding, what's the baseline in your workplace? How many, you know, what sort of organization profile do you have? Do you have very many women in the organization? And this is not an older woman's condition. This affects women from their 40s upwards, sometimes earlier, but definitely the 40s upwards. And therefore, you know, you need to look at your organizational profile and see, you know, is this something that's relevant to your organization? If it is, it's probably a good idea to do some work surveying or focus groups or whatever amongst your organization to find out what women feel in your organization going through menopause, what they would like to see, what changes they would like, what supports they need, and also to find out what managers know and feel and how comfortable and confident they would feel having a menopause conversation with one of their staff. So that would be where you could start. We have a number of kind of training programs. So for example, we offer a general overview of menopause, an educational piece, focused primarily at staff going through it, but it's for anybody in the organization. We offer specific bespoke training workshops to HR and to managers to help them understand menopause. What is the menopause? Who does it affect? What is the impact on the individual? So giving an understanding, how does the menopause impact organizations? Should managers be directly addressing employees or should women be declaring it themselves? How should managers, particularly males, I would think, approach this, but actually any manager? And what action is needed from the individual perspective? So there's, and how you might create a program, because no two women will experience menopause the same way, because no two women are the same. And therefore, what works for me as an employee or as a direct report may not work for the next person. So therefore, looking at what sort of reasonable adjustments do we need? I worked in an organization, I was getting 20 to 30 hot flushes a day, and I had them at night as well, so my sleep was broken. What would have worked really well for me was to sit near a window, was to be able to adjust the temperature, maybe you know, the aircon or something like that, and even to be able to speak about what was happening when I had a hot flush, when I was presenting to senior managers, to boards, and so on, rather than having to hide it and you know, be knocked off my stride and lose my confidence. In one of the organizations I was working in, when I had these hot flushes, it was a particularly hot summer, and everyone was complaining about temperatures. So what we were issued with was desk fans, individual desk fans, and my goodness, that was a savior to me. So something as simple as that, it could be. Another person might have insomnia is huge. And they may need to maybe start with more flexible working time. You know, now that people are coming out of the home, because working from home has been commonplace in the last 18 months, now they're coming back into the workforce, they're less able to control their environment. They're less able to maybe, you know, use a bathroom more frequently, get access to cold water, open the window, go out into the garden, whatever it is that they may need. And therefore, it is even more important now, coming back into the workplace, to kind of look at things through the lens of the menopausal woman. And the other thing we offer is menopause champions. So organizations can appoint a champion in their organization, somebody who wants to, you know, champion this issue, but also who maybe act as a go-between or a facilitator for those conversations between management and staff, or between management, I've seen a staff member and HR. And they can also organize other sort of social events, support groups, lunchtime sessions, lunch and learn, and that kind of thing. And we also have a number of online videos that we do deep dives into. So they're educational about, say, menopause and sleep, menopause and mental health, menopause and diet and lifestyle, menopause and the physiological symptoms. So they're kind of deep dives depending on which areas affect women. And I think ultimately it's to develop a menopause in the workplace policy that's suitable and appropriate for your organization. And just to say that in the IBEX study, what came out from that is that a lot of organizations actually feel they have a lot of things in place currently with their work, with their current policies that are suitable for menopause. The problem is that because women, it isn't talked about, women don't know that those policies or benefits or whatever are actually applicable for menopause. So it's really, I think, about sort of taking a menopause lens or microscope or whatever, and looking across what you have in your organizations and starting to talk to people about what you can offer specifically around menopause to develop a menopause friendly workplace.
And Loretta, what would be an example of that stuff that's already there, but under probably a different guise?
So people have maybe access to EAP. So if they were having issues that might be around mental health issues or concerns or anxiety, you know, they can already, there's already suppliers of, because to my mind, menopause is like where mental health was, say, 10 years ago. Because you already have, organizations all have, or most have, a mental health kind of policy or program, and you can apply some of those. So people could get counseling or mentoring or coaching or whatever around that. And they could be, their absence policy, you know, they may feel they can't take time off because they're menopausal to be out of work or to go to medical appointments or whatever. Whereas actually they can. It's just not specifically stated that it's for menopause. It's also around organizations having trained management and trained HR to be able to conduct that kind of difficult conversation, maybe around performance and so on, because it can be anything that can affect an individual's performance. So why can't it be menopause? So I think there are a number of different benefits that are potentially already in place. That people could communicate better around that they're suitable for menopause. But there may be others that need to be specifically created for the individual. Like, for example, somebody might want to go, they're working a 5-day week, they might want to go to a 4-day or 3-day week, or they might want to job share, and so on and so on. So those arrangements are already in place for, you know, women with young children, et cetera, people who want to parent or co-parent, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's just about saying this is also available for menopause.
And what do you believe is the appropriate way that this should come up to a people leader? So if someone is, let's just pick absence or looking for flexibility or whatever in their start and stop time, that might be a symptom of the menopause. Should the individual tell their manager that actually this is what's going on? Or what's your views on that? How should it come up?
Well, my views are, it depends on the individual. First of all, I think, you know, some women don't want to be put into this box and labelled menopausal woman, and therefore they don't want to disclose and everything. And that's absolutely their right. However, others may. I think in general, the woman would benefit, as would the organisation. But it would take a break, you know, it would take courage. So, you know, it would be a thing of, you know, looking at tracking your symptoms. We have a symptom checker on our website, and I can send it if you want to send it out, but there's 40 symptoms. And women look at their symptoms and look at the pattern and so on. Then they need to prepare their conversation in advance, as you would any conversation with your line manager. And, you know, I think, yeah, I do think I would encourage women. I didn't do it. And I would obviously do it now. But then again, this is what I do 24/7. But I would, because the more women that speak out, the more commonplace this becomes, the more part of the health narrative. I mean, menopause is like puberty in reverse. And this is an analogy that I've used. And so really what's happening in a female is that all these hormones are rushing up through her body, particularly estrogen, almost in a, you know, straight up in a vertical curve. And in at menopause, it goes in reverse down a very steep hill. Yet we would never, as parents, dream of not preparing our children for puberty. We wouldn't dream of not preparing ourselves for puberty. But yet none of us are prepared for this menopause. And yet we also, you know, if teenagers are moody, or they've got issues, or they're, you know, not feeling well, the females have period pain, cramps, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they're given some leeway around that. And we know why it is. And it's a natural event. It's the very same at menopause. It's just we have chosen not to talk about it up till now. But I would encourage women to speak out if they feel comfortable or confident about it. And I think it was in an organization where maybe one woman doesn't feel confident or comfortable, she might see if there are others who would be willing to go together in a group and speak to HR, or she may go through HR instead of going directly to her line manager. But I think, you know, there's also security in numbers, so that might be a way to tackle something. And it depends on the organization as well.
What can colleagues do to be allies, Loretta, and male and female colleagues?
Well, when I was going through my menopause, I wouldn't dare say anything about that because A, I didn't want people to know my age or even be able to guess my age. And yet they probably could guess it, give or take 5 years anyway. But the reason I didn't was that I had this sense that I would be considered, you know, a bit of a crazy lady, a bit moody and maybe over the hill and past it. And so we do live in an ageist society in the Western world for sure. And youth is the currency. So I think it's an understanding from people that, you know, people who are in the older age group, 40 plus is considered the older age group, do have a lot to give and to a lot of leadership, a lot of experience and so on to bring. I think the other thing is to be supportive. I think it's to be empathetic. You don't need to go up and say to a woman, oh, I saw you had a hot flush there. How's your menopause going? Like, I mean, I would think that would be totally inappropriate. But it may be something like, how's everything today? You know, is everything okay? If you ever need to talk to anyone, I'm available or whatever. So it's, I suppose, just kind of reaching out in an empathetic way to let you know, let your colleague know that you're there to talk. I think sniggering and I think anything like that, making jokes about it is very unhelpful, to be honest. And I think organizations need to be aware that this is a legislative risk as well. So there's been some cases taken in employment tribunals in the UK, and there's been an increasing number of cases taken in the previous few years. And what they've done is they've ruled in favour of the menopausal woman on the grounds of gender discrimination, on the grounds of age discrimination, and in some on the grounds of sexual harassment, you know, jokes, snide remarks, sniggers, that kind of thing. And in one or two cases, they've ruled on the grounds of disability. And I know women wouldn't want menopause to be considered a disability, but in the particular instances, the woman I know of, had chronic symptoms that led into other health issues and became an issue for her. But there was no understanding, empathy or whatever in the organisation, and she was unfairly dismissed. So, and the disability laws in Ireland are open to wider interpretation than they are in the UK. And I know in the UK, they're pushing for legislation to be brought in for organisations over 250 that they would all have a menopause in the workplace policy. And should that happen in the UK, it won't be long before it comes in Ireland. And I know Stephen Donnelly, the Minister for Health, is actually looking at menopause in the workplace policy guidelines. So they will be coming down the track. He's already announced the opening of the first dedicated public menopause clinic in Holles Street, the National Maternity Hospital. So just that employers need to be, and it's better to have, I think, the carrot approach than the stick approach. So the carrot approach is, you know, do the right thing and do what's right for your employees and create a culture where you are diverse and inclusive and that you want to nurture talent. And you want to help your staff to, you know, the big thing at the moment, be the best they can be and bring their best selves to work and so on. But this can be a very difficult time for women. It really can. And I think, you know, we want that rather than the stick approach, which is legislation is coming. You better get yourselves a policy. Because in those instances, sometimes it's a policy that sits on a shelf rather than is a living, breathing part of the culture and the DNA of the organisation.
Yeah, agreed. And I think you did a great job at the start of this conversation about setting out all of those carrot reasons around productivity and people attendance and indeed just retention. You know, we're most organizations are fighting for talent. So why would you lose it when you don't need to do so? Loretta, thanks for joining us today. If anyone wants to contact you about the Menopause Hub and menopause in the workplace, what's the best way to get in contact?
So we have a website, themenopausehub.ie, and we have a section on our Menopause Hub website that says that it's menopause in the workplace. And we've our brochure there that you can download on the services that we offer. You can also contact me on LinkedIn. I'm Loretta Dignam on LinkedIn. And there's also a Menopause Hub page on LinkedIn. We're also on all social media. Or you can just pick up the telephone to the clinic. But yeah, available to discuss this. And I'm really passionate about it and about trying to make change. And so willing to work with organisations, no matter your size, no matter your budget, to help you achieve this.
Brilliant. Loretta Dignam, founder of the Menopause Hub. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me and for shedding a spotlight on this area.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.